The next matter before us is 20-4106, United States versus Gates. And Ms. Stengel, if you're ready, we are ready for you.
May it please the court, counsel for the United States, Ms. Williams. I am Jessica Stengel representing Mr. Joseph Gates. Mr. Gates stopped walking in direct response to law enforcement. That, under this circuit's precedent, is a seizure. United States versus Morgan, 936 F2nd, 1561. Should there be any, the fact of seizure is reinforced by what followed next. When Mr. Gates tried to end the encounter and walk away, the officer exited his vehicle and simultaneously chased and tased Mr. Gates. At no point during the encounter did the officer possess the necessary particular and objective facts to justify the intrusion into Mr. Gates' liberty.
Wasn't there a significant fact between the first decision to drive alongside him and then the getting out and tasing? I mean, during the, I don't know what you want to call it, pacing in the police car, the officer noticed a bulge in the waistband that, based on his experience, he thought was probably a firearm. Does that affect the analysis here?
Actually, Your Honor, I'm going to disagree with your characterization of what happened. Okay. After Mr. Gates stopped in response to the officer testified that he saw a suspicious object, a bulge in Mr. Gates' waistband. He did not know what it was. That was his consistent testimony throughout. And which this goes towards the reasonable suspicion aspect of the analysis. And this presumes then we're finding that Mr. Gates was in fact seized and did yield to officer authority. To the extent that reasonable suspicion, assuming that there was in fact a seizure, reasonable suspicion is based on the overarching principle of the particular form of surveillance practiced by the police is permitted to go unregulated by constitutional restraints, would the amount of privacy and freedom remaining to citizens be diminished to a compass inconsistent with the aims of a free and open society?
Can officers investigate people around businesses late at night when the businesses are closed, particularly a car wash when the individual appears to have no car? And when the officer drives by, even though he may not be seen as an officer in a patrol car because of the way the car is marked, even then this individual hides, wouldn't an officer be pursuing his law enforcement duties to check this out? Isn't that what officers do?
This is a fine line. Absolutely. We want officers to investigate, but we do not want officers to seize people absent reasonable suspicion. And the fact of hiding is a hybrid question of both law and fact. Mr. Gates moved, and that's a factual conclusion with which we take no issue. The legal conclusion of concealing it or hiding or evasiveness is something which this court reviews de novo. And in order to reach evasiveness as the end result,
Did he hide or did he not? Isn't that a fact?
No, Your Honor.
I would disagree. Record.
No,
The officer said he didn't hide.
For the officer to make the conclusion that he hid, the officer would have to have the information necessary to get inside Mr. Gates' head.
How about saying I saw this guy move and then he ducked behind a wall? Could the officer not report that objectively?
Again, Your Honor, I'm going to say ducking behind a wall imports motive and intent to the person's movement.
Well, you're just saying what he's doing. You're not saying why he's doing it. You're saying I saw this person move behind a wall.
Which is different, Your Honor, than saying he hid.
Okay, we'll go with he moved behind a wall when I saw him.
Saw me. Presumably, it's hard to know. And that in and of itself is not reasonable suspicion. That is not indicative of imminent
don't we take all these things together? You know, the old totality of the circumstance song, we take it all together and say, was there reasonable, articulable suspicion? Taking all these things together we've just described, for the officer to conclude there was reasonable, articulable suspicion.
Is a totality of the circumstances analysis absolutely, Your Honor, we agree on that point. And what we're asking is, objectively, would a reasonable officer in the position of our particular officer believe that recent imminent or ongoing criminality was happening and warranted intrusion into somebody's liberty? And based on the facts presented in this case, it wasn't there. We as a society, we want law enforcement officers to investigate, absolutely. And we don't want them to run roughshod over our Fourth Amendment rights. And in this case, seeing someone in a commercial complex in which there are two businesses that were open, for a split second as he drives by, doesn't constitute reasonable suspicion sufficient to justify the investigative detention.
Counsel, let me ask you this question. Under all the totality of the facts that we see, is it your argument that at no time during this entire occurrence, there was not reasonable suspicion on the part of the officer?
Absolutely, Your Honor, that is correct. And this goes to what Judge McHugh mentioned earlier about the bulge in the waistband. A bulge is not per se reasonable suspicion.
But it's a factor, right? I mean, we've got all these things kind of adding up in the totality of the circumstances. I mean, he wasn't at the open businesses. He was at a closed business. He was over by the coin dispenser machine. He didn't have anything to wash at the car wash. And he moved in ways that could reasonably be interpreted as hiding when the car came by. And then quickly ran across the street. I mean, at that point, isn't there at least an interest to investigate further by the officer? Isn't that, we want police officers to not only arrest after a crime has happened, we also want them to be a deterrent.
I agree, Your Honor. We do want officers to follow their training, to follow the specific and articulable facts, not gut feelings that they have. Mr. Gates was at the car wash, which was open at the time. He went across the street and started walking down a sidewalk is a fact that is there. The fact of a bulge in his waistband is not enough to justify detaining him. In Utah, it is lawful to carry a concealed weapon, and you don't even need a permit. Oddly enough, it's not yet illegal to not have a permit. This is where a bulge in the waistband, if we make this per se reasonable suspicion, anybody with a bulge in their pocket caused by anything will now be subject to detention by law enforcement. And that is a step too far.
But you're ignoring all of the other facts and asking us to focus on one fact, the bulge in the waistband, but that's not the test. The test is the totality, and the bulge is a factor to be considered along with all the others.
It is a factor, but a bulge in the waistband does not turn being at a car wash, which is open for business, crossing a street, and then walking on a sidewalk into the next great bank robbery of the century. And it does not justify the officer detaining Mr. Gates.
When do you say that the detainment occurred?
The first seizure occurred when Mr. Gates stopped in response to law enforcement after law enforcement hailed him on the sidewalk, then put him under the spotlight, self-identified as law enforcement, and then demanded Mr. Gates provide an explanation for his purpose and presence. And this is fundamentally different than what happened in United States versus Tafuna. And it aligns more closely with the dissent in United States versus Hernandez, in which the dissent points out that there was no seizure because officers, while driving in a car next to someone, absolutely is intimidating. They asked the defendant, can we have a conversation? Can we talk? Can I engage you? In this case, there was no request. There was no attempted conversation. This was an officer driving alongside an individual alone at night, putting that person in the spotlight and demand and accusing him, in so many words, of wrongdoing.
Evidence. Did the officer say stop?
The testimony was not clear. The officer could not remember. However, I think we can look at what Mr. Gates did and reasonably infer that even if the specific word stop was not mentioned, it was.
So would you formulate a rule that whenever you have law enforcement and an individual with in the same space, one is in a car, one is walking, and the individual that's walking stops of his own volition and turns and looks at the officer. Is that a stop within our Fourth Amendment analysis?
Well, it is a case-by-case analysis, and I am loath to create any bright-line rules. I would say based on this court's precedent, based on persuasive authority from other circuits, when you have officers exerting command and control over a situation, which we expect to happen as recognized by the Supreme Court in Brendlin versus California, when that person stops without being physically forced to stop, that is in fact a seizure. And as we have discussed, that seizure must be supported by reasonable suspicion, which was lacking in this case. If there are no further questions, I would like to reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you. Ms. Williams?
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Jennifer Williams for the United States. It is part of a police officer's job to assess circumstances and, if necessary, to investigate to see whether criminal activity is afoot, in the words of this court's precedents. The encounter does not become a seizure simply because an officer pulls up in his patrol car to an individual walking on a sidewalk at night and attempts to engage him in conversation. This is so even if the suspect voluntarily stops walking to answer the questions. And that is exactly what happened here. The initial encounter between Mr. Gates and Officer Ricks was consensual until the point where, and this all happened very quickly, Officer Ricks got out of the car, Mr. Gates turned away, started to attempt to run away, and Officer Ricks pulled out his taser and tased him.
What did the officer say when he was driving along next to Mr. Gates?
The only testimony in the record, and the characterization of what he said as demanded, is not supported by the facts in the record. He testified at the suppression hearing that he asked Mr. Gates about his presence at the car wash. That is all that the evidence supports. And it's important to note this court's standard of review here, because the district court denied the motion to suppress, this court reviews the district court's factual findings for clear error and views the evidence in the record in the light most favorable to the government. And so the factual inferences that Mr. Gates is asking for are precluded by the standard of review. There's no evidence in the record to support that Officer Ricks demanded anything of Mr. Gates. He simply said that he asked him what he was doing at the car.
Oh, there's no body cam or audio at this point.
There's not, and he explained why. My understanding from the record is that he turned on the body cam as he was making a U-turn, but it takes about a minute for the sound to catch up with the video, and so this all happened very quickly, within about a minute. Counselor, so I believe the audio picks up.
Counselor, in regards to the body cam, I've seen it, I've looked at it. Can you tell me when you, in looking at that body cam, can observe the bulge in the front part of the defendant's body?
Well,
the officer testified that he saw a bulge, and I can't just, I'm trying to test what the officer was saying. And the fact that I can't see the bulge doesn't mean that it's not there, but could you see it when you looked at the body cam?
The video from the body cam, it is dark, and looking at it from our perspective is very different from his perspective at the time. And so I wouldn't want to definitively say whether I could see it or not. What is clear is that he testified that he saw it, and the district court credited that inference.
I know.
Or that testimony.
I also note too, that in the testimony that when he called for backup, he did not mention that he suspected that the defendant was armed. Is that not correct?
That is true, but there are other facts in the record that support his testimony, again credited by the district court, that he was concerned that Mr. Gates was armed. And he, after seeing the bulge, he got out of his car and he reached over his body and prepared in case he needed to use his taser, and then actually used the taser. And so, yes, he may not have
Didn't he actually tell the defendant to stop? I know the question was asked of opposing counsel, but as I recall reading that when he got out of the car and he felt like the man was getting ready to run, and he told him to stop. Is that a correct recitation of what we know in this case?
Yes, that is. And there are we're talking about two.
Is different... that when you're saying that the seizure, do you agree that probably at that time there is at least a seizure?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
And we agreed below that at that point, the encounter becomes a seizure. We do not agree that prior to that point, the first time Mr. Gates stopped walking, that constituted a seizure, because the evidence indicates that he did so voluntarily and not in.
If we discount the bulge that the officer said, and this is a hypothetical, if we don't agree that there was a bulge that could be seen, is there then reasonable suspicion to tell the man to stop?
Yes, there is. But before answering that question, I would just like to reiterate that please, this court would have to find that the district court's crediting of the officer's testimony that he saw a bulge was clearly erroneous. If the court does that, yes, there are a number of other factors that contribute to reasonable suspicion.
But one of those factors you rely on is that it was a high crime area. And my question to you is, do we accept that an area is a high crime area based solely on officer testimony? Is that all you need, is for the officer to come in and say, I've been an officer in this area for 6 years, this area is high crime?
I think your question has two parts. The first part, yes, this court has accepted a factual finding that an area is high crime based solely on the officer's testimony. Now, in cases where this court has credited the officer's testimony, the officer has not come in and said simply, I've heard that this is a high crime area. It's been based on the officer's personal experience patrolling the area and the officer's personal experience being involved in various arrests in the area. And that is, there are a number of cases where this court has credited the officer's testimony. And this court has, to my knowledge, never required statistics, high crime statistics, in addition to an officer's testimony. But as we cite these cases in our brief, there's the Connor case and Briggs, and even in Dell, which we mentioned, the district court there had granted the motion to suppress. And so the court standard of review was different. And so it deferred to the district court's determination that it was not a high crime area. But again, the standard of review is different here. this court defers, or this court views the evidence in the light most favorable to the government, and counsel, high crime is a factual finding.
Counsel, let me, in the reviewing, our standard of review, we normally review this as, you know, clear error, but when we also take into account a video, the lapel camera, does that change our standard of review?
No, I don't believe so. I don't believe the court's review of factual findings suddenly becomes de novo because there is a video camera. The court has the camera, but it looks, the district court had the video as well. It had the benefit of both the video and Officer Ricks's testimony about what happened. And that's why this court reviews factual findings for clear error, because it has a sort of bird's eye view of what happened, but the district court judge was there at the hearing, heard the testimony, and viewed the video.
Well, Judge Baldock raises a question that I've had for many years. If we're looking at a video and the district court's looking at the same video, say you have the extreme example, the officer testifies, and also the district court has the video. The officer says, I was in my car. We look at the video. The officer is not in his car. What do we do with that?
Well, I believe that would fit under the clearly erroneous standard of review. This court doesn't just accept factual findings without any review at all. The standard is clearly erroneous. And in a case like that, the court might find that findings were in fact clearly erroneous.
We become the fact finders.
If the court determines that the factual findings were clearly erroneous.
And we do have case law that says if we've got video evidence that directly contradicts, we can look at it and it contradicts the testimony or even the findings, that we are free to say that's not what the video shows. So in Judge Briscoe's example, we would be free, wouldn't we, to say we're not, you know, that finding is directly contrary. It is in fact clearly erroneous.
Yes, absolutely. But in a case like this where perhaps it's hard to see, perhaps the video, when we're looking at it on a computer screen, is unclear, that we would maintain is not the same situation.
Along those lines too, counsel, and again, this is a kind of a hypothetical. If the defendant in this instance just kept walking whenever the patrol car pulled up and the patrol officer never said stop, or wouldn't the outcome be different if he didn't say stop in regards to the defendant just walking along the sidewalk that evening?
Well, perhaps, but I would point out that in this case, our position is that he didn't say stop.
Yeah, well,
that he stopped, Mr. Gates stopped walking, but he stopped voluntarily. And voluntarily. So
that's the point of my hypothetical. In other words, the word stop in there comes into play very distinctly in this case. Isn't that right?
Yes, it is correct. And that is this court in its, I believe it's the Hernandez case, that the encounter became a seizure when the police officers told the suspect to stop. And that I would say that there's a suggestion in the reply brief that we want a per se rule that certain magic words have to be used to turn the encounter into a seizure. And that's not our position. The encounter can certainly be a seizure in the absence of the word stop. Our point is simply that under this court's case law, if the officer does not tell the defendant to stop, then that is evidence that the encounter was consensual.
So we have cases that list many factors that we are to consider to determine whether or not an individual is seized. And one of the things is that we look at the conduct of the officer to see if he's exercised authority over the individual. So I take your point about magic words aren't necessary, but there are other ways that could cause us to conclude that authority was exercised over a defendant.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. And this court has laid out some of those factors in cases like the Hernandez case, when it talks about some of the factors or whether the officers activated their siren or flashers, operated the car in an aggressive manner to block the citizen's course or otherwise control the direction or speed of his movement, displayed their weapons, or commanded the citizen to halt. And as we argue in our brief, none of those factors are present in this case.
If we were to find that the initial driving along where Mr. Gates stopped was in fact a seizure, is it your position that that would have been appropriate too?
Yes, and we do make the alternate argument that assuming that was a seizure, it was supported by reasonable suspicion.
And so the bulge is unnecessary to a determination of reasonable suspicion in the government's view.
Well, in that alternate scenario, yes, because in that scenario, it was supported by reasonable suspicion before he saw the bulge.
Okay.
And as we lay out in our brief, there are a number of factors that support reasonable suspicion. I see that my time has almost expired. If the court has no further questions,
does not appear so.
Thank you. We ask that you affirm the district court's denial of the motion to suppress.
Okay. Ms. Stengel, you have 3 minutes on rebuttal.
Just a few points that came up. The government made much of the idea that Mr. Gates voluntarily stopped walking. He stopped walking without being physically forced to stop, but he did stop in direct response to law enforcement authority. The word voluntarily does nothing to sway the needle either way. He stopped in response to authority. That's it. The court also brought up the body cam. This is an instance, and that's going towards the officer's tone and demeanor and whether this is a conversation, a casual encounter, or a display of authority. The officer here had complete control over his body cam. To grant an inference in favor of the officer when we have the evidence of Mr. Gates stopping in response to his words would be to incentivize poor body cam management. Body cams are a wonderful tool and we want officers to use them. We do not want them to use them in a way that subverts fact-finding in the Fourth Amendment.
Are you saying there, you're implying that the officer did not have his body cam running intentionally?
I'm saying that should this court grant an inference in favor of finding the officer's tone and demeanor to be conversational or anything less than authoritative, the potential for a perverse incentive exists. And that's all I'm saying. The issue of this high crime area, this court has never upheld a factual finding of high crime area based on a singular officer's say-so. And rather, this court has treated this particular fact with great caution and concern, given the severity and the breadth of the consequences such a designation has. Now, the Connor case the government relies on is fundamentally different than what happened here. There, the officers had specific and personal experience with specific and personal crimes within a very recent time frame. In fact, it was a shooting or stabbing in the same area 2 nights prior to the incident in question. And those officers limited their testimony to shooting and stabbing in that particular area. Here, the officer testified that he dealt with, and I am reading from the transcript, retail thefts, burglaries, drug sales, drug distribution, drug use, warrant arrest, robberies, domestic violence, fights, and alarms. That's effectively the Utah criminal code. That is not a finding of high crime area. I see that my time is almost out. Mr. Gates was seized throughout the entirety of this encounter. At no point did the officer have reasonable suspicion. We request that you reverse the district court's finding and submit the matter for decision.
Thank you for your argument today, counsel. We will take this matter under advisement.